The following presentation was recorded at the 2010 Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute. More information at thedocforlearning.org.
I'll tell you a story about a certain organization that was having severe financial difficulties. And they had a board meeting, and they were sitting around the table. And the board chairman said, "Okay, everyone lay your wallet on the table." So the men all laid their wallet on the table. He said, "Now move your wallet one step to the right." So they all shifted their wallets. He said, "Open the wallet and decide what you're going to give to the offering." So they looked, and then he said, "Now hand the wallet back." And he said, "Now give what you decided you were going to give from your own wallet." So, you know, we look at other people's finances. We look at other people and we think, they have enough. Why aren't they giving more? But we need to start here. We need to start in our own wallet. Let me give a bit of an introduction, a bit more of a background as to how we get to this point. My background in the field of Christian education goes back to my 17 years teaching in Gap, Pennsylvania at Fairhaven Christian School. Actually, I have one of my students here, more of them here, so goes back a few years. And it's there that I gained the experience that I share with teachers and boards in my work as a rep for CLE. After our church started an outreach in West Virginia, I had been teaching up until the year 2000. When we moved to West Virginia, we did not have any families with children the first year, so we didn't have a school. So there was 1 year in there that I was not involved in operating a school. The second and third year we were there, the congregation in Gap sent us a teacher and paid for the teacher. Now, those were two very easy years. Well, that stimulus package ended, and so then, since then, we have been on our own. By then, I was actively involved in Christian Light, and we only had four students the first year, and so it was not feasible in our little community there to hire a man teacher, and so I have not been teaching in the classroom since then. For this workshop, then, with that background, I am clearly here playing the teacher's advocate. I'm going to make that clear out front. I'm here speaking to you not as a board member, although I've sat in boards for probably 25, 30 years. I am here as the teacher's advocate. I am here pleading the case for the teachers. Now, I may be unbalanced, and you'll have to straighten me out. I may also get rather blunt and to the point. If that sounds too scary or too severe, I don't mind if you walk out. That's your privilege. But I do think we need to get serious about finances, and I'm going to look at some of those areas in how we can make some of that. And when I get to the end of it, you may be surprised at where we come out. The other thing is I want to hear from you. I don't think I have all the answers. I know I don't, but I have some suggestions and some ideas. First of all, I like to dissect the title. What do we mean by adequate? Now, I'd like to take a little survey here. Some of you are here. How many of you are teachers? Okay. Just one. Okay. The rest of you, how many are ministers? Got a few ministers here. And how many are board members, active board members? Okay. Now, of those board members, how many of you are businessmen? You have a business. Okay. Those are some things that I'm going to be picking on as we go through here. Now, back to the word adequate. And I'm not going to ask Brother Peter what is adequate. Adequate is a very relative term. Adequate is a term that needs some kind of comparison. Adequate with what? Is it adequate with my wants? adequate with my needs, adequate with my desires, and what criteria do I use to decide what is adequate or not? When is enough enough? And how do we know the difference? Now, I mentioned I'm going to be the teacher's advocate, and I'd just like you to be thinking along this direction because that's where I'm taking this workshop. What is adequate for all the rest of you except Brother Peter? What is an adequate salary for you and your family? What are you willing to live off of? How little are you willing to live off of? Because that is a mindset that we have too often when we look at adequate teacher salaries. And maybe I'm being unfair, but I'm going to be very blunt, I guess, and just try and wake us up. Now, I realize that you're going to come on the defensive and say, look, you can only shake so many apples out of a tree. But let's look at it. Maybe the key is, maybe we don't need as many apples as we think we do in our own lives, and I'm not talking about the teachers now. When we look at personal finances, I think our people have the mindset that whenever there's, and I'm not talking about school finances now, I'm talking about personal finances, because the school finances are strictly or very closely tied to personal finances. You understand that connection? Because it's out of our personal finances that the school is funded. And so when we think there's a lack of finances to operate the school, it has to come out of personal. It has to come out of our personal wallets. And so often we have the approach that, let me take a bucket. Let me illustrate with a bucket. A bucket full of water. But this bucket has some output as well. And so maybe the bucket has some holes in it and the water's leaking away. And so we often take the mindset that I need to get more water. I need to keep dumping more water into this bucket because it's running out. Did you ever think of plugging the holes? Cutting back on what's leaking out so that there's doesn't take as much in the bucket? In working with families and their personal finances, that's often what is asked, is where can I get more income? Where I think the real question is how can I live on less? How can I live on less? You know, we have that materialistic bent. Go with me back to 1982. I was first hired as a teacher in 1982. And last taught in 2000. And in the course of those years, from 1982 to 2000, I'm very happy to say that the cultural climate towards schools and especially toward men teachers has changed and continues to change. I like that change. Let's keep it going. In many of our conservative schools back in the 80s, Brother Jonas could go back into the 70s and some of you as well, there weren't that many men in our conservative circles that were teaching school. And so those of us who did were kind of a different bunch, a different group. And I would like to make it very clear in what I'm saying that I feel even back in the 80s I had an adequate income and I could share some things there. I don't think I will. Could we have used more income? Absolutely. Any of us can always use more. Was our family deprived? I don't think so. Although it's rather interesting now that the children are all married and have families. Some time back in a family discussion when they were all back home again, they got to talking about how they thought they were poor. And, you know, I never picked that up when they were small. They thought they were poor. But why did they think they were poor? Was it because there wasn't enough food on the table and clothes on their back? No, it was they were comparing themselves with their friends. They were comparing themselves with some of their peers. and they weren't able to get all the things that others got. Do they feel deprived? No. I don't think any of them would exchange that if they had. What made them think they were poor is, well, it may have been the cars we drove, may have been the things we did without, the vacations we didn't go to, the trips we didn't take, etc. But I think all of them would, if you would ask them in my absence, would probably say that they feel very rich and blessed indeed. But let me give you two stories. The one happened very recently in another community, which I will not mention by name. There was this community where there was not a very high value placed on education. There was a group that saw the need of better schools and established a new school in that community. And this certain family of which I'm speaking sent their children to that school, and after a few years saw some marked improvement, and the father in particular was very happy with what was going on, what he saw in his family, what he saw in the increased learning of the children. And a brother friend of mine was visiting in the home, and he remarked to the father, and the father and he were sharing together some of the things that they saw as improvements. And then this friend of mine said to the father, in noticing his teenage son, he says, "You know, your son has the makings of a teacher." He says, I see a teacher in your son." And the father said, "I know. But," he said, "I don't want him to be a teacher." And the irony of that story is, and my friend was puzzled, and he said, "Well, you've been talking about the positives of the school, and to keep that going, we need men like your son." And the remark that he made was, "There's no money in teaching." So he was content to have someone else come and teach his children. He was very happy with the benefits that he was receiving, but someone else's son, not mine. "There's no money in teaching." That was his remark. And that's sad. It really is. Thankfully, most of the communities that I relate to would not have that concept of teaching anymore. But what are we really willing to pay to have an adequate wage for our teachers? Story number two. And I'm giving you some of these stories to kind of prime the pump till we get into the discussion, when we get into the nitty-gritties as to how we can adequately finance our teachers. Back to 1982 again. When I was first interviewed as a teacher candidate, I was employed in a service department of a Chevy dealership in Paradise, Pennsylvania. I had been in the auto mechanic business for about 10 years, and by that time I was assistant service manager. A member of the school board was delegated to come and talk to me, a bit of an informal interview. It wasn't the real interview process. That came later. And he was authorized to offer a salary. And when he offered the salary, evidently my face betrayed me or something, because he backpedaled a little bit and he said, "Well, we thought we were offering a pretty good salary for a school teacher." But the irony of the whole thing that I don't think he got is he was one of our customers. And I, in times past, had worked on his Chevrolet. And so, in a roundabout way, he was willing to pay me more to work on his car than to teach his sons and daughters. You get the point? Now, I asked you, that was back in the early 80s, where do you think that car is by now? It's junk. Went through the crusher or sitting somewhere rusting away. That's junk. Where are his children today? They are eternal beings. You know, they have the opportunity to impact generations. Now, which is more important? That's the questions we need to ask when we talk about adequate salaries for teachers. Because isn't it sad when we have qualified teachers, when we have the kind of teachers that we've been hearing about upstairs, and after a bit, and I hear this, when some of those caliber of teachers no longer teach because they, in the community that they live, they can't afford to buy a house, or they just seemingly can't keep on at that salary level. And that to me is very sad. So, how do we decide what is adequate? And now I'd like input from the rest of you as much as we can. I didn't note whose all hand went up, but I know a number of you, your hands went up when you said that you are business owners. How do you decide what is an adequate salary for your employees? Okay? How do you do it? What are some criteria that you go by when you decide the salary for an employee? How long they've been there, okay? Longevity. Okay, how responsible they are, how well they do the job. Others. What the competition pays. Oh, we'll look at that. Is there competition in schools? Yes, okay. What the competition pays. Others. Qualifications. Okay. You know it's too low if the quality of employees is low. And it may also impact on that point as to who applies. Because you're going to get a reputation in the community as to what you pay. Yes? Okay. On the size of their family, the number of dependents. Okay. Do we do that for school teachers? We need to look at that. Good. Okay. If they should threaten to quit, would we be willing to pay them, or what would we be willing to pay to keep them? And we should be doing that now. Now, we're talking business here. You understand? Don't think about school. And if I say that, you're going to think about school, aren't you? I'm going to make some parallels as to how we do it in our businesses compared to how we do it in our schools, and see if there are some parallels in that. Okay, others. Okay. Does it take someone threatening to quit to move our pocketbooks? Okay, go ahead. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know how long they've been mulling over that. And you don't know how hard that decision was for them to reach at that point. Okay? Now, let me throw out an expression that we hear when we're talking about school teachers. I've heard this expression numerous times in different settings, and it's that we don't want the teachers to be there for the money. Have you heard that? We don't want our teachers to be teaching for the money. And there's validity in that statement. Maybe I should restate it. We don't want them to be there just for the money. And I agree with that. And just a note on that comment, I don't think we have too much to worry about that yet. I don't think we're there yet. But let me ask you, business owners, again, do you have people working for you who are working just for the money? Sure. If you quit paying them, how long are they going to show up? In other words, they're there for the money. And when I say for the money, I'm saying they're there to put bread on the table, to put clothes on their backs, a roof over their heads. That's what they're there for. In the meantime, you are benefiting from that. And so, you know, we're not quite always comparing apples to apples. We're comparing apples to oranges or something like that. Does it bother you if they work for you just for the money? Sometimes. Sometimes. In other words, you want a quality of employee. You want someone who is willing to put more into it, but you are willing to pay them for it. That's a part of business. What other reason might there be to work for you? Okay. Nice guy. Maybe to get more personal, how much do you pay yourself out of your business? Are you in it for the money? Are you in it for a service to the community? And, you know, this is not a business seminar, but I'm just bringing up some of those things as a basis for discussion. Okay, I'm going to open it up. Questions, discussion, with that background before I go into a few more scenarios. Okay, good question. Who should be doing the sacrificing? And that's a question I've asked for years. And we're going to, I have a handout, not a stimulus package. I do have a handout that we're going to compare some things. So keep that question in mind. Who is all supposed to give a living sacrifice? Just school teachers, okay? Other questions, or maybe you have a discussion to add to that. Valid point. In other words, it's easier for a business to look at numbers because you can crunch them. What we're working with here is eternal values that we can't crunch numbers with. And someone has often said, or it's often been repeated, that we need to look at Christian education not as something to pay, but as an investment. It needs to be an investment rather than a bill to pay. How about dependence? Someone mentioned dependence. Does that have any place in what we pay a teacher? And maybe I'll just throw in another one here. Should there be a difference in pay scale between the married and the unmarried? And between the sisters and the brothers for the same job? Comments, questions. I'm opening it up for discussion. Okay. Do you want a VS worker or an employee? Number of dependents does make a difference. Okay. Pay reflects responsibility. Now, Might some of the reason we get ourselves into this quandary be this? We know that to have a married man, he's going to need a house, he's going to need living expenses and so on, more than what a single. And what I'm getting ready to say, is it because our pay scale is so low that we have to give extra to a married man that we're not giving to a single? I think that might be where it's at. Not so much on the amount of responsibility we're giving, maybe not even the amount of experience, but simply because of necessity. How about the sisters? Let me give you a scenario. Let's say you have a married man with 10 years of experience. You have a sister in the class with 10 years of experience. Now, maybe the married man has a principal responsibility, which would, you know, we're talking about paying according to responsibility. You know, we have differences there. But let's say their teaching load is equal. You have a married man and you have a single sister. What should be the difference there, or should there be a difference? And I did some inquiring in preparation for this, and I talked to one brother, and he said, he raised a new thought that I don't know if I have thought of before. He said, if we would be challenged in court, that paying less to the sisters for an equal job could get us in trouble. The other thing is that maybe we don't give adequate attention to Let's take in my situation. Having taught for the years that I did, and thinking of our future needs, there's one thing that I can fall back on, and that is our children are dedicated. They say, "Dad, we will take care of you and Mom." Does an older single sister have that to fall back on? In other words, she has a future to look out to. Who's going to take care of her in her old age? I'm going to have children and grandchildren who can help out. But who's going to take care of her? So there's different ways to looking at that. You know, what is adequate in that situation? What about a retirement plan for teachers? I won't ask how many of you have a retirement plan. I'm not saying that we should have. Do you have more on that?
My thought would just be that if the church is what it should be, just a simple verbal commitment will take care of.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And that's what the church is for. Okay? Let's move into a little different area. And maybe during a major recession is not the time to talk about this. But let me ask this question. Does the affluence of a community have anything to do with teacher pay scale? And I think we know that it does. Now, what I'm getting at is this. I have the confidence that our teachers as a group are more than willing to do with less if the community is really struggling. In fact, we've had of our teachers say that. They know that right now things in the economy, the men are having trouble, some of them keeping work, and they have even offered to do with less salary. We haven't taken them up on it, but they have offered to cut their pay because they see the dire straits that some of the families are struggling with. Now, that's commendable. The other scenario is, what if there is an affluent community where a house at the mountains, a second home, an RV, a boat, fishing trips, hunting trips, extended vacations seem to be the norm of some of the school families? What justification do we have in a situation like that to decide what is adequate pay for the teacher or not? By what criteria are we going to measure it? And so I say again that I think materialism has made its inroads to the point that so many times we think we are entitled to some of those things. And then we ask our teachers to sacrifice to teach our children. And back to the question, you know, who should be making the sacrifice? Whose children are they? They're not usually the teachers unless you're a married man and have children in class. But in other words, it's other people's children. So who should be doing the sacrificing, the teacher or the parents? I think sometimes we have that backwards. We get kind of mixed up in some of those. Now let me switch to non-monetary values. In addition to teacher salary, I think there's a lot that can be done and there's a lot being done. I would like to say that. From my experience, food would appear in the car. Got a telephone call telling us to stop at a local butcher shop and pick up a quarter or a half of beef. And to this day, we have no idea where it came from. Those are things that go a long way in the life of a teacher. Maybe you are a dairy farmer. We had a family that provided us with milk. They said, "You come to the milk tank and help yourself." Maybe you have a second rental property, offering that to the teacher, various things that can be done. If you have a long-time teacher, watch his transportation needs. It's difficult for a teacher with an adequate salary to set money aside to buy another vehicle. And that would be something that you could just set up a fund. Set some money aside as a school, as a church, as a congregation, to watch his transportation needs or hers. Get a better car or something. Housing, etc. Yesterday, I sat in the principal's session, and they were talking about time management. They were talking about preparing ahead. It was mentioned that, and we heard it upstairs in the session on burnout, how that there's an academic overload. And I heard the heart cry of some of those teachers, some of those principals, that they would really like to have some time in the summer to study ahead, prepare lessons ahead. If they can just take one subject, maybe a U.S. history course, and work through the summer and have lesson outlines and plans ahead of time, that would be so valuable to them. But then the question is, a lot of teachers need that summertime to catch up on other things. They need to get another job. They're maybe not free to go to Faith Builders for a 5 or 6 week term. They're maybe not free to go to other teacher training facilities because they're working. So maybe as boards we need to look is how much time do we count as the teacher salary? When I was first hired, I was hired as a teacher and a principal, and I was hired right away for a 10-month salary. That gave me 2 weeks before school and 2 weeks after school. That left 2 months then when I was more free. And I did that for a number of years. What I did later then, it worked out better that way as I spread those 4 weeks out throughout the whole summer. I would go into school every Monday. It helped me to catch up with mail, phone calls, things that needed to be done, so I could do it that way. But how free are your teachers in the salary that we're giving them to spend time in the summer to do advanced planning? Do we just pay them for the 180 days or whatever they are in school, not realizing it takes a couple weeks before the first day of school to adequately prepare their classes and all of that? So we maybe need to look at some of that. Are we doing enough along that line? Can we go to a full year salary for a teacher that is committed long time? Pay them for their summer so that they use that time in preparing for the coming school year and keeping things in order there. Yes. Okay. Half the salary was paid during the summer months of what was paid during the...
That was if you continue teaching.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe some of you are doing things like that. I'd like for you to share it if you are. Are you doing anything for your long-term teachers? Are you paying their way to Faith Builders? Have you considered some of that? If you can be so kind as to share it in a modest way, I'd like to hear, just for the encouragement of the rest here. What is being done to help our teachers in the summer? Okay, giving teachers a choice of 20 payments or 26. Okay, every 2 weeks. Now, if they take 26, they're going to be smaller. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, others.
The first year we did it, we just give a big payment at the end of the year for the summer so the treasurer doesn't have to keep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cuts down on the paperwork. And you do that out of your excess funds at the end of the year, probably. No, I mean out of the excess funds in your treasury.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Sure. Okay, others. Maybe we're ready for the handout. Now, the first part of this is a tuition and salary survey that Brother Jonas initiated at the last year's board seminar. And it's a survey of teacher salaries, giving the lowest in a school and the highest. And I thought maybe if we look at this and interpret some of the figures, it will give us a little bit of an idea. With this caution, we know Scripture says they that compare themselves among themselves are not wise. And I don't want any of us here to look at some of these lower figures and think, well, we're doing pretty good. I'd rather have us look at the higher figures and say we've got room to grow. Brother Jonas, I wasn't sure. Maybe you could clarify one point for me here. The number of students on the left column there, there are not 35 there. Are some of those in groups? You have 35 schools surveyed, but not 35 numbers.
Well, not every school submitted the number of students.
Okay. So some of those down there in the in-betweens. Right.
And not every 35 people responded, not everybody provided information for each of the three categories.
Okay. So there were 35 schools that responded. Some did not respond in three categories. I chose on this handout to only use two of the categories. The third category is upstairs on the handout at the handout table. The asterisk is Canadian dollars. So maybe you want to go to the far right two columns. And what that simply is the lowest salary of a teacher in that school and the highest salary. So the first line there, 10 and 17, rounded to the nearest 1,000. 10 and 29, 12 and 25, 12 and 27, 14 and 20. And you can look at the figures. I'm not going to go over them. You'll notice that there are a few in the 30, and there's one in the 44 figure. Now, I guess to you board members, I would ask this question, looking at the far right column, which is the max that our teachers have been getting paid, and most likely those are principals as well, teaching principals. How many of us, and don't raise your hands, would be content with those figures? Or even yet, how many of us would be content with a figure on the left, on the lowest salary? So somewhere in between there is where our teachers are falling in these 35 schools. Now, I would say, even though this is not a scientific survey or an accurate poll in that way, I would say it's a pretty good cross-section. Wouldn't you think, Jonas? A pretty fair cross-section of who we are and what we're paying our teachers. Any questions or comments from this before we go into some of the others? Right, that's right. So it's not scientific. Don't get carried away too far with it, but it just gives you an idea of what's being paid out there. Because I find that in going around, I have board members ask sometimes, what are others paying? Some have no idea, where to go with this. Okay, part two on page two is tuitions. Here's again various ways, and I'm not going to digest this. I'd like to spend more time with page three. But this you can take along back and you can look at it a bit. And as I mentioned, if we have time here at the end, I'd like to hear how you fund your schools. Let's go to page three. At the top of page three are some miscellaneous items from the survey. And I'm just going to leave that there. Maybe I'll point to number six is an interesting one. There's different ways in which schools do it. Number six there, each church member over 21 pays $40 a month. Parents pay additional $40 per month for each of their students. That covers about half of their expenses. There are schools, churches that do that where they assign an amount for each person in the church, and maybe even children. And this is paid as a tuition in addition to church offerings. Then there's a school in Ohio that takes the tax returns of each of the patrons and assigns a tuition according to the tax return. Now, some people say, that's getting pretty into my private affairs. Well, there is an exception clause. They have a maximum, and if you don't want to show them your tax returns, you can just pay the maximum. Okay, let's go to the second half of page 3. This is a sample salary schedule, and I took this from an actual document from a school, and I doctored it up. If anything, I came lower on some of these figures, but I'd like to make it very clear that it's not the dollar amount that's important here, as I'd like for you to use it as a tool to develop a salary schedule in your school. Let's look at some of the various things that they used. They figured a base rate at $10 per hour times 1,800 hours annually. That's a 10-hour day for 180 days. Now, how many of you and your businesses are paying $10 an hour for some of your top employees? Think about that. Number two, for every IRS dependent, excluding the teacher, they give an extra $2,000 up to $6,000 extra per year. Then if there's college training, so much per year. Teaching experience, they add so much a year. Student teaching, regular teaching, etc. A teaching principal gets $600 extra plus $10 per student beyond 60 students. Some figures for a teacher's aide. The school pays curriculum materials and tuition for children for full-time faculty members. Continuing education. Faculty who are hired for the following year are eligible for reimbursement for study as follows. $10 per hour for up to 200 hours of studying and or classroom time approved by the school board. In other words, this would be where some of that summer training comes in. They would pay up to $10 per hour for up to 200 hours in the summer for preparation for the following school year. And then there's a breakdown for part-time teachers and then voluntary service teachers. Any questions or comments on that chart? And I'm hoping you can use it as a tool, as an ongoing salary in your schools, that you can look at that. You know, add so much a year for longevity as the teachers keep coming back. Keep in mind their former experience. Keep in mind their training. Have they gone to college? Have they gone through the TAP program? Some things like that at Faith Builders. Things that you can do as an ongoing improvement. Any questions on the chart? Now turn to the back of the last page. And this is a chart that someone handed out at a teacher's meeting some years ago. And I don't know who handed it out. Maybe it was even Brother Jonas. I don't know. Someone handed this out, and it was entitled, Ways School Teachers Have Saved Money, and You Could Too. And I'd like this to be maybe my closing comment or closing thoughts. How long do we have here, Jonas?
5 minutes.
5 minutes yet? This is a list that was prepared to help teachers stay within their adequate salaries. Okay? Is it fair to hand something like this out at a teacher's meeting and say, okay, teachers, if you live like this, you can make your salary stretch a lot further? I'd like to suggest that it is we who need this list. Because if the patrons and board members and people in the church would be more minded to adapt this lifestyle, is it unfair to say that we probably would not have the problem with trying to pay our teachers an adequate salary? if we, more of us, could adopt this kind of a lifestyle? And I'd like for us to think about that. You know, isn't there a middle road there somewhere? You know, we're asking them to live like this so that they don't need so much to live off of, so that we have more that we can live off of. That's the bottom line. And I promised you I'd be blunt, so I don't think I need to apologize for that anymore. Okay, we have just a few minutes. Any comments on this? Maybe a thought provoker yet. How do you raise money for your school? Is it all offering? Is it tuition? Is it fundraisers? Community auctions? How are you raising the money that you currently have, and is it working? What are some systems that are working for you? Anyone care to share your experience on that? Subsale? Okay. How often during the year? Twice a year, okay. Subsale. Others?
Permissions and medical, but then the general includes the school.
Okay. And we would have a very similar general fund, school fund. Was there a hand back here, David?
It is tuition.
Tuition? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's a variety of funding. Okay? Yes. But you have periodic offerings as well. But this is an extra, one extra offering per year that everyone knows is going to be at that time. Yes, okay. One additional extra, okay. Okay, do you want to talk about that? And that's Pennsylvania only, is that right? I think so. I think it's Pennsylvania residents only. Do you want to explain that a little bit? That is a Pennsylvania state legislature thing that they have provided for charities. And it's not a deduction. It's a complete write-off. In other words, it's money for money. Dollar donated is dollar off a tax minus the 10% handling there. So if you're in Pennsylvania and are not a part of that, it's maybe something you want to look at. It takes money out of our tax dollar to the government and puts it into the schools. Okay? At a recent school meeting, I heard one businessman say that in their community, they banded together and decided they're going to have more input from their businesses to fund their school. And I think that's a very worthy one. And I'd like to challenge business owners, what is the goal of your business? Are you ever going to just get bigger and bigger and bigger? Or should you put a limit to your business and instead of pumping the money back in, start pumping it into other things, into the schools, into whatever, and use that as a source of income for your schools, for the teachers? Okay. Okay, so you have percentages that get divided out. A special love offering taken for that goes all to the teachers. Okay. Others. We do a similar thing. What our board chairman did a number of years ago is we figure up what it's going to cost for teacher salaries. We divide it out by family. And then he hands out slips of paper, and every family, we do it at a men's meeting, puts down on that paper a pledge, what they pledge to put into the offering through that year. Then we can collect those pledges and see if we're anywhere close. And it's encouraged that those who can give more than their share give more, to help the brother who can't quite pull his load. And our pledges sometimes reach, sometimes they don't. No one gets checked up as to whether they meet that pledge or not. But it seemed a little bit more, put a little more bite into just lifting an offering if they know that I have committed myself to put this much in the offering each time or each month. And we do that for 12 months. Okay, I think you've been very helpful. I'm going to dismiss you. God bless you. Thank you for coming.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.